joined by the president and general manager of the Saskatoon Blades, Colin Priestner. It is a busy time and a little bit more busy because for the first time in almost 20 years, there's an expansion team in the Western Hockey League, the Penticton Vs, and they'll have their roster filled a little bit on Wednesday with the expansion draft. Colin, this is a first for you, having to go through one of these things. How difficult, how trying, how tricky is it to get ready for this particular event?
Yeah, it's been something that we've kind of been drawing up lists for several months in anticipation of it. And then when we got the rules, kind of refining the list. And then at the end of the day, we have a lot of young players with so many 08, so 16-year-old going into their 17-year-old year, and 07 players that were on our roster last year. So we really didn't want to lose any of our young guys, and we were kind of more exposed than other teams because of how many young guys we have signed that we believe in. So, there's a couple options. I mean, you can strike a side deal with Penticton to have some sort of other arrangement made with them so they don't take one of the younger players on your list, maybe, or you rank them and you send them into the league, and that was the decision today. So, we've still got a couple options on the table for that, and it's never fun kind of prioritizing your lineup because you love all the players on your list and you don't really want to lose anybody. So hopefully we come up with something that works for both sides.
There's two options with regards to protected lists. I'm going to assume you went with option A, 16 players aged 17 to 20, because you only had three 20-year-olds and one of them is a European player.
Yeah, definitely. That was the one that we were looking to pattern after. So, it's hard when you compare, like protecting a 16-year-old player that hasn't played in the league yet, but you think they have upside, as opposed to someone who's on the roster who's a little older, but maybe in more of a depth role. It fills up pretty quick. So, Penticton will have some options of some good players to take. And, we still have an opportunity though with them to strike a deal today if we want to. So, we'll be looking at both options.
I was going to say, have you spoken with Fred Harbinson about a potential deal prior to the expansion draft?
Yeah, actually we have. So, it was something that we were looking to, if we were going to do it, it was going to be some point today. So we're doing some meetings right now and kind of trying to analyze what our best option would be for us. And it's certainly on the table. So
later on Wednesday, the prospects draft starts. You have the 22nd pick overall, thanks to a trade you made with the Medicine Hat Tigers involving Tanner Molendijk. How has that been getting going here? I mean, I know you're happy to have that pick compared to what you had prior to, say, Christmas time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a first-round pick, so at the end of the day, it's a little later in the first round, but, we've got guys like Chase Waters and with picks like that before, so it's still an opportunity to get a great hockey player, and we're picking right now at 22 overall, and then again at 31 and 35, and the U.S. draft being a lot more important than in previous years with the rule change with the NCAA and American kids being far more interested in our league now. It certainly put a lot of priority on that number 7 pick in the U.S. draft overall because, we feel we can get a really good player there too. So that kind of changes your strategy a little bit with what you do with your first round pick in the Bantam draft or the prospects draft. So a lot of things to juggle and consider, but they kind of all work in concert with each other.
You answered one question that I was going to ask just now by mentioning the U.S. priority draft. How much more have you put into scouting American-born players in anticipation of this particular draft starting on Thursday morning?
Well, a lot more. I mean, in the past, our U.S. draft was done a lot based on, the teams that would come up and play tournaments in Canada. And it was more like, finding kids that wanted to come and were interested in the league. But, a lot of the top kids were more on the college path. So now, myself and Tenser have both been down to the U.S. multiple times watching players and watching teams and lots of film on these guys. And certainly I would say the vast majority of kids want to see what their path is with the National Development Program because they don't pick that team at the USNDP under 18 and 17 team. They don't pick those until they're a year older. So even if you're the 50th best player in the U.S., you might think you have a chance to make that team, and what you do this next year will determine that. So a lot of these top kids who play at Shattuck, St. Mary's, or these top academies, they all have a lot of interest, but they also want to see what happens if they make the national development team, and you don't know that for a year. So you kind of have to juggle if you're picking high, like, do I take the absolute best player, even though it seems like this guy is probably good enough to make the national team, but you're doing it a little bit blindly because you haven't really seen any of the other regions in the U.S. So you might think a defenseman is so good, and how could there be five other defensemen in the country better than him? But maybe there's three in New Jersey alone that we've never seen that are amazing too. So it's a bit of a way, you just got to weigh like the risk reward of a certain player and take a player that you think is really good, but might not be as high on the radar for whatever reason with the national team, which is really speculative. So it's a fun process, but it's certainly interesting.
I like to say about you, you've never met a deal that you really didn't like or didn't want to consider. I'd have to ask you if you've considered looking to try and move up in the prospects draft higher than picking 22.
Well, I always like to lose. Actually, I like to move down. That's kind of been our thing lately, is just picking up more picks. And last few years, we're always the team that seems to want to move down, pick up a second or third round pick to go down a few spots. And, you know, Zach Olsen, we were going to take at, I think it was 19 or whatever we were picking that year, or 20th overall. And we ended up trading down to 29. We got a second round pick for that, and we ended up getting Zach Olsen with the 29th pick. So it's it happens where I think that's the better value, but certainly we prioritize kind of into color codes where if we think a player is in a, you know, a top 10 or top 5 or, you know, a certain bucket of player that we think is like elite top, you know, 7 or 8 in the draft talent, and we see an opening to move up a few spots and go get that guy, then yeah, those are the ones that you have to make those deals to see if you can get a guy that you think is clearly better than the next group of players coming. But it's so hard at this age too. It's you know, who's more valuable, like a 6'2" defenseman who can move the puck, or a 5'8" right winger who might someday score 40 goals? Like, it's not really that there's a right or wrong answer. It's just kind of what you want and what you're prioritizing as a hockey club and what fits with the groups that you have from the last few years. So I'll definitely look at moving up if we think there's a star player that's still sitting there in the teens, but I don't think we don't really want to be moving up into the top 5 or 10. I think that would be too expensive for us.
Have you zeroed in on 1, 2, 3 players possibly that you might likely get when it comes around to that first round pick of yours?
Yeah, it's just tricky with picking 22nd. You got to wait for 21 teams to make decisions first. So you're kind of, you know that maybe there's 10 players that you think there's a 0% chance they'll still be there. And then maybe there's 5 players you think there's a 20% chance they'll still be there, but unlikely. And then you think there's, okay, this bucket of 10 players that you think, you know, at least one of them will be there. And so that's where you start winnowing around and on your list, and you try to say, okay, what are we prioritizing? Do we go with the 5'7" guy with a lot of skill and speed, but he's maybe going to be a smaller player? Or do you say, okay, we want some size and some strength down the middle, but, you know, not as much of a elite skater or elite high-end upside? So it's not that one player is so much better than the other. It's just really about what you're looking for, or even a defenseman or a goalie. Like, they're all very different to what we want. So you want to have a nice complement of all of them, and that's what we're going to try and get with those, especially with those first 3 picks plus the U.S. first rounder. So it's kind of our goal, is to use those 4 picks to kind of, you know, come up with what we think is an elite draft class. And then, of course, you can get the Cohen Lodges. It's had 187 overall some years that turn out better than guys taken in the first round. So that's where, you know, we really put Dan Tenser and his group to the test, you know, with those 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th rounders to find the next kind of under the radar star.
Can you tell me what the hope is to be able to get with those 3, 4 picks that you're looking at? What general area you're looking at?
Well, we're looking for players that kind of fit the mold that we've been drafting the last 7, 8 years, which is, you know, really highly competitive guys that leave it all on the line, that are self-motivated, that, you know, dream and aspire to be great, and we'll do whatever it takes to get there. So whether that's a second line center type or a scoring winger or a shutdown defenseman or a puck moving offensive defenseman, like, to me, they have to fit that category first before anything else. And then we're really emphasizing skating. We want to have quick players that play our style. So we have four or five players that we think are in the mix with those picks. But again, you know, we're not like the NHL where there's so many lists out that are, you know, done by, you know, big companies like TSN and things like that, that in central scouting, we don't have one of those. So you really have no idea. You know, you like a defenseman that happens to be from Manitoba and you think he's really good. You might think he's the sixth best defenseman in the draft. Like, other teams might think he's the 20th best defenseman in the draft. Like, we don't really know, because there's, you know, there's some lists out there, but they're still kind of in their infancy and usually very small one-person, two-person operations. So it's really hard to determine whether, okay, are we way high on this guy, or could we get him one or two picks later because, you know, maybe we're higher on him than everybody else. I think at the end of the day, you got to just trust what we look for in players, and whether that's, you know, I've never believed that you need a certain one player type in terms of like, oh, we only want high skill wingers that do a certain thing. Like, we're always looking for a complement of players, guys that play in the middle of the ice, that play two ways. We need some skill on the wings too. We also need puck moving D and goalies. So the general thing is, are they super competitive, self-motivated? Do they scream Blade out to you when you watch them? That's a question I always ask our scouts. And then, funny enough, the other question I always ask is, like, how upset would we be if the Prince Albert Raiders got this player? That's kind of the, like, one of the measurements we use. Like, you start to really get, oh, okay, like, I would be really pissed if they took this guy because I think he's going to be a menace to play against. Okay, well, maybe we should prioritize him higher if our biggest rival had him, and it would kind of upset us that they had him, but we wouldn't be that upset if they took player X. Maybe we should change our ranking on it. And it kind of puts it in a different mindset for you.
Last one, Colin. Dynamic with regards to the Memorial Cup host team, Kelowna, and what they're hoping to do. They've got a lot of work to do in order to be competitive. What do you find as far as the climate around the league with regards to what Kelowna is going to try and do over the next couple of days, over the next month or so?
I think they're thinking longer term than that. Like, I'm sure they would love to get stuff done. I haven't talked to Bruce in a while, but Bruce Hamilton, their GM, but I'm sure they're swinging, you know, they have two first rounders, one of them's third overall, and I'm sure they're swinging right now trying to attempt to land a big fish for themselves to, you know, throw with a Ginla at the top of their lineup or as a top pairing defenseman. But it's hard for teams to be moving franchise players in the summer. Like, it's a lot easier if you're out of the playoffs and you're in, you know, they're not going to be back the next year, and they're, you know, it's a lot easier to move your player in that case. So I don't think they believe that they're going to have a fully finished roster as of September 1st. I think they're going to have to do this over time just because they have a lot of heavy lifting to do. But they also have upwards of 8 first round picks to use. They've got 4 that every team has. They got 2 for Crystal. They've got another one from Price. They've got lots of picks in their arsenal. So, I mean, I'm sure they'll do a good job loading up a team, but I'm not going to be surprised if they don't do a whole lot in the next few days, because I just don't see that many teams moving elite players in May before the teams know where they stand themselves next year.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much.